Hi, I'm Mel Pickup, Chief Executive of Bradford Teaching Hospitals, and welcome to this month's episode of our podcast series, where I sit down with colleagues and partners from across the Trust and the wider community to find out more about them and their contributions to the health and well-being of the people here in Bradford. On the 4th of February, World Cancer Day raised awareness of the impact of cancer and the significant effect it has on the lives of patients and their families. Here at the Trust, our oncology psychology service supports these patients with the psychological implications of a cancer diagnosis and helps them throughout their cancer journey. Today, I'm pleased to be joined by Dr. Mary Hill, a consultant clinical psychologist, as well as Mandy Blackburn, a breast cancer clinical nurse specialist. Before I chat with Mary and Mandy, we're going to hear from breast cancer patient Jodie, who shares her experience of the psychological impact of cancer and how she was supported by the team here at Bradford.
I remember sitting there and immediately you go into this state of what I can only describe as psychological stress. And yes, I'd gone straight to that fight mode and wouldn't do whatever I can to be around for my 10-year-old son and my 7-year-old daughter for as long as I can. But at the same time, I sat there feeling fear and worry and an element of grief. The life that I had before me as a busy working mum with my children was all going to change. It wasn't just my own journey and grief that I was trying to process, but actually what was going to happen for my children. What I did find strength from is sat in that room with my dad. And I remember just thinking, no matter what, this cancer's going to have a fight on its hand. I found myself feeling and thinking about what if I don't make it? What if this waiting list that I'm on doesn't happen quick enough? What happens if these test results don't come back? I've been a nurse a long time. The waiting is probably the worst part. I was now facing new challenges and issues. I was facing multiple surgeries, chemotherapy, radiotherapy, and all the while, there's potential implications for my children and their futures as well. But it's hard to accept something while you're trying to fight it. I remember having my initial surgery and I was basically left with half a breast. That brought its own challenges around body image, body confidence, self-esteem. All the while, I'm trying to keep a sense of normality for my children. You know, I've got cancer patient Jodie and this persona, this mask I've created. And then I've also got working Jodie, mum Jodie, daughter Jodie. There were times that I felt hopeless. Things that hadn't bothered me before, things like the children leaving clothes on the floor, the school bags when they came back from school at the doorway, and yes, you always trip up over the school shoes. These things that I could do before to bend, pick them up, I couldn't do now. It was in late 2024 when I met with the breast surgeon and the plastic surgeon, and it was at that point that both consultants suggested I access clinical psychology, and that was really done with intentions to help me process life post-cancer. Psychology services were absolutely fantastic from the very outset. They were able to tailor the package that I was offered around my current cancer treatment. I had face-to-face meetings. And yes, I was apprehensive about approaching a service. I didn't consider myself to be ill. I just really needed that safe and confidential space without feeling that I was going to burden family and loved ones. I acknowledge life will never be the same as it was pre-cancer. I've got a sense of support and that it's okay to prioritise my own needs and have that emotional regulation. When do I need to step back? When do I need to actually rise to that challenge? And it's allowed me to put the measures in place so I'm not just surviving, but I'm actually thriving.
Mary, Mandy, welcome. Now, we just heard from Jodie. And Jodie described the psychological impact of her cancer journey really powerfully. When someone hears the word cancer, what tends to happen emotionally to them before their treatment even begins?
I think it's a really, really tough time. And I think often, you know, it's the worst news for people and they think the worst case scenario that this cancer diagnosis is going to be life limiting in some way. And that, of course, brings enormous anxiety and worry. And for many people, they go into a kind of fight flight sort of response where, you know, there's just those strong emotions and they're not able to think through what's happening or maybe attend to everything that's they're being told in the consultation. And that can be really, really tough to get that information across. That can be quite important at that point of diagnosis.
And people often understand the physical side of the cancer journey, but what do you wish people understood more about the mental side of that journey?
Having some degree of emotional impact is actually really quite common. We think about half of the people who've had a cancer diagnosis are impacted in some way, and about 15% need some sort of specialist support. And I guess that's not just the patients, that's also the families, the friends, those ripples. And yet we still struggle to admit when things aren't okay. And, you know, I think there's been a huge change in how much stigma there is around mental health and psychological distress, but people still struggle to really acknowledge that things are difficult.
And is there a common pattern, Mandy, when you speak to women? Is it sort of a predictable kind of response, or does it, I guess, inevitably, as Mary said, shock, fear, overwhelmed, anxious?
I think it is very unique to the individual when we meet with them. And it is really impacted by other things around them as well, their previous experiences of perhaps somebody who has had cancer, also their cultural beliefs or their cultural background. Sometimes that can support or help people with diagnoses, or sometimes it can be challenging for them. So the unique individual experiences do shape how somebody responds to that diagnosis.
And that idea that in a way you are sort of not just treating the patient, it's the people in their immediate orbit, their family, those closest to them, and how they are reacting and responding, and then how the patient has to relate to them with this diagnosis and what lays ahead of them in terms of their treatment. It's quite complex, isn't it?
I think it is very complex, and we're often meeting women who may be very much at the centre of a family, yes, and feel that they have to be okay for the wider family, or they need to be able to still offer all of that support to their wider family. So sometimes it can be really hard for them to reach out and say, actually, this is really difficult. I need some support with that.
Mandy, you're a clinical nurse specialist. Just, you know, tell us a little bit about how you got to be a clinical nurse specialist. What took you in this particular direction in your nursing career?
I've had quite a few different backgrounds. I went into midwifery for a while, and then I had an opportunity to work with the cancer team, and I really enjoyed working with that team. They're just such a very supportive unit. They're very committed to the care that they give to patients, and it was a really rewarding experience, and I've remained there for 20 years. It's been so rewarding.
And we were speaking just before we started recording, you're about to retire very, very soon after a very long time, so we wish you an awful lot of joy and happiness in what sounds like a very well-deserved, and I'm sure is, retirement. But as a CNS, you often have the most contact with patients. What does that look like in reality? How are you are able to support people emotionally as well as clinically?
I think it starts from the very first contact that you have with that individual, and the psychology team have been so helpful to us as clinical nurse specialists in really thinking about how we relate to patients and how we can assess when somebody is feeling very distressed or anxious, and some of the things that may be available to help and support those patients. In our code of conduct, we talk about respect and dignity. It's really important to us to hear from them what is critical to them, what is most important to them.
The actual process, the pathway of a cancer journey, is not linear. What do you think are the bits of the process that cause most of the psychological impact?
When a patient notices a new lump, they have some time to process what that might represent. May that be something that is worrying or concerning or require treatment? But we also work with ladies who come for breast screening. They feel completely well. They have no that there's any issue, and then they're invited back for a further assessment, and we may find a cancer that they're completely unaware of. So those responses can be very different. Waiting for results is a really anxious time for patients. We know that that can be really difficult to think about what that result might mean, what impact that may have. And then cancer treatments themselves are complex. They do demand a lot of time. They come with fears around the physical impacts of those treatments, both medical treatments and surgical treatments. So there's a lot of worry and fear for patients at that time.
And Mary, can you paint a picture of the cancer psychology service in Bradford?
There's Maxie, Kate and myself, and we're all trained to work with people with all sorts of different health conditions, and we've specialised in working with cancer more specifically. And we see people within 5 years of a diagnosis or treatment here in the Trust. And we also offer training and consultation and psychological support. There's still a lot of fear about seeing a psychologist and what that might mean or what that might involve. I mean, even the word psychologist can put lots of people off coming to see us. So we do support the nursing team with how to talk about that initial referral on what that might involve. And really that first session is simply a conversation. It's usually about 50 minutes long and it starts with that person's concerns, what's most important to them, whilst trying to help them to feel comfortable to really kind of open up and talk about those important things. But I think, like Jodie explained, having that confidential space away from the healthcare team, away from friends and family, can be really important to share those really important concerns without worrying about the impact of that on those friends and family.
3 is a very small number compared to the size of our population. Does everybody with a cancer diagnosis get that opportunity, or how do we decide who doesn't and who doesn't need that?
We are often spread quite thinly. It's the work that we do with the nursing teams to help them recognise, you know, when people need that extra support. And usually it's around the distress it impacting on some way that they're functioning in life. So it might be that their relationships are affected. It might be that perhaps after treatment, they're really struggling with the idea of going back to work. It's all a negotiation. The nurses that we work with will be talking to patients about whether they feel that this is something that they need extra support with.
And without breaking sort of patient confidentiality, is there any sort of example that you can share with us that really brings the impact of your support to life?
One person I work with had a head and neck cancer that had really changed the appearance of her face. It really affected her confidence in terms of how she felt, you know, even leaving the house, socialising. She was able to go back to work in terms of her physical abilities, but that impact on her confidence was quite significant. By not engaging in normal life, she'd become quite withdrawn and quite depressed. And it was at that point that she was referred to us, to our service. And I gradually worked with her to start to kind of look at herself again in the mirror and engage with her body and really start to appreciate aspects of her body that she did enjoy, that she did like, so that she was able to start to go out a bit more and meet people.
I guess a big theme around a cancer diagnosis is uncertainty, isn't it? All of that uncertainty impacts people differently, doesn't it? Some people can live with uncertainty. Some people absolutely can't. How does that manifest in terms of the behaviours that uncertainty can induce?
I think many of us like to be in control, and often people will find themselves needing to call a lot for reinsurance. And I guess that illustrates why the CNS role is so important, because they're there from the very beginning. They often will give them a phone number and say, call me if you're worried. In terms of psychology, what we'll often do with people is try and find ways of balancing a bit of time for worry with a bit of time for just enjoying normal life. And that can be enormously difficult, but there are lots of techniques we can teach people to help with that.
How do patients typically respond to the end of treatment?
They don't know what normal is. They have a new reality now and they're trying to navigate that. They have a fear around what new symptoms may mean, what pain may mean, how that fits into their new normal, what things they can expect, what timelines those symptoms may change over, and when they need to link back in with services. And we do get a lot of patients who ring us very regularly in the initial period because they're just checking in. this happening at the moment? Should I expect this? Is this normal? I really want to say thank you to our clinicians because they're amazingly flexible at seeing patients at short notice when they're worried about something, being able to assess it and work out with that patient whether there is a concern or not. And I think that's really important to them in the initial period when they're trying to navigate that new life.
And do you ever connect a patient who has gone through a similar treatment pathway with another patient who's just at the beginning of it? Is there some sort of peer support mechanism sometimes?
We absolutely do have that in Brest. We have a group of ladies who are just happy to speak to patients about their previous experiences and how they are living well beyond their cancer or how they are managing their recovery from cancer. But in addition to that, we have national charities that provide really excellent support. So Breast Cancer Now have like me, where they can hear what may be happening for that patient, what their anxieties are, what their journey has been, and then match them with a patient that they're supporting and mentoring.
Not all outcomes are as we would want them to be. So, Mary, when treatment becomes non-curative, what changes psychologically for patients and families at that point?
I think, understandably, we tend to see higher rates of distress in that population. And people are often, you know, in a big period of adjustment to perhaps a different future. They've perhaps been putting all their energies and efforts into fighting the disease. And now there's a requirement to kind of shift their attentions to perhaps looking at, you know, how they want to use the time that they've got left. And these changing goals can really take time to adjust to. And alongside that process, there's often a grieving for a loss of future or a loss of what was expected in the future. And that's all part of that process, really. And people often need space to be able to do that processing.
People talk, don't they, about having a good death when they understand that that is the inevitability of the course of this disease process. What does that really mean in real life? How does psychology support and help people think about what matters to them most?
I think that's exactly it. What matters to them most is the most important thing. Whether we're aware of it or not, there are lots of ideas around from our various cultural backgrounds about what a good death might be or might not be. But really, we need to be thinking about and focusing on what's right. And it can take time to work that out, and it needs to be sensitively timed. We're really lucky in Bradford, you know, as well as having excellent CNSs like Mandy, we've got really good specialist palliative care support with lots of incredibly experienced people who, you know, are very good at having these conversations with people.
And Mandy, if a patient or family member is listening and feeling overwhelmed, what would you want them to hear?
I would just want them to know that the services do want to help and support them in whatever way is meaningful and useful to them. And I would encourage them to reach out to services and just have that conversation. And sometimes you just have to take some space to reflect on what's happened to you and process that information.
And Mary, if you could leave people with one message about cancer and mental well-being, what would that be?
We know that cancer is often a challenging disease with harsh treatments, but one of the most valuable things we can offer to people who are affected by cancer is someone to be with them, to hear how they are, if they want to talk, and really most importantly, to let them know they're not alone. You know, over and over, the evidence shows that people can achieve more, cope better, and even be more well with that connection and warmth and love from other people. So that support, wherever it's comes from, is so important.
Thank you both so much for joining me today and sharing your valuable insights into the psychological aspects that a cancer diagnosis can have. Your work clearly has a profound impact on the lives of your patients. And I want to say a big thank you for our patients. And Mandy, most especially, thank you for your many years of dedicated service to this hospital and the people of Bradford. And all the best for a very long, happy and healthy retirement. with your wonderful grandson.